Hi, I'm Jeremy Kirk with Intel 471, and this is Studio 471, which is our video podcast series on cybersecurity and cyber threat intelligence. At some point, most organizations are going to have issues, an IT security issue, but whether it's a data breach, a ransomware incident, or other IT operational issue. And this is really where organizations are tested from a crisis communications perspective. Tom Bolitho is Senior Director of Strategic Communications at FTI Consulting in Washington, D.C. We're going to have a discussion about how organizations can manage a cyber crisis. Thank you very much for joining me, Tom.
Jeremy, thank you. Great to be here.
So, when an organization has a cybersecurity incident, can you explain what are some of the immediate pressures?
Of course. Well, the first thing to say is that it's well known by now, but this is not just an IT risk. They're often a whole of business risk, and they therefore need a whole of business response. When we're approaching it, the three areas, the three pillars that we really consider to be the basis of any response are especially in the short term, are the legal and regulatory. So, what are those reporting requirements and notification requirements? That part is handled rightly by counsel, whether that's internal or external. The second pillar really is the operational side. And this is where some of the rubber hits the road and it actually hurts some of these organizations. What is the impact of any immediate disruption? What are any internal pressures that are resulting from the inability for certain systems to operate? And what is that causing? What kind of harm is that causing in the immediate term, whether it's to processes or indeed to people? And the third piece, which is where we really come in, is that reputational pillar. What does all of this mean for your stakeholders? Internal, external, you are bound to have numerous individuals inquiring, clamoring, or it may be the case they're not yet doing that because they're not yet aware. However, it's vital that you consider that because it's certainly, as you say, a pressure.
And when you get called into, I guess, an organization who is having an incident and all of these pressures are mounting, what is the first step, that you usually take?
Again, a great question because in that early busy period where things are often moving, the first thing to say is that we're often not called in immediately. It would be great if, we got a call as it happened and said, this is happening. Occasionally, very occasionally, that's the case, but we're often called in after the fact. So things have happened. Other advisors may, in fact, be engaged. There may have been some progress. It may be well into the incident. But when we come in, the first thing we want to establish are the facts around the incident. And I've already mentioned some of those internal and external pressures that might have resulted from that operational disruption. But getting those facts straight, avoiding any kind of speculation, more important in the earlier phase of the incident, but equally important throughout, allows us to then create in our world the basis of the communications playbook that will inform that reputational pillar, that will inform that kind of stakeholder communication. But what we do is we use those facts and then we'll build out a set of key messages, which is the communication spine that will get regularly updated as those facts become known, as the situation updates, that informs a lot of our material, informs a lot of that stakeholder engagement that allow you to be accurate and consistent in those early days when there's a lot of noise and there's a lot going on. So that getting that baseline of facts is the most important thing that we can do.
And how would you differentiate cyber incidents from other kinds of crisis communication incidents that might affect organizations?
The really interesting thing about these, and it's well known because we've all, some of us may not have been, but those of us that are unlucky enough to work in this world sometimes and experience the sharp end have got that call on a Friday night or a Saturday morning or over a weekend. And the thing that we often find that surprises people is just the speed at which these happen, because it may be the case that an opportunist threat actor has come in and successfully encrypted, if we're talking about ransomware, or shut down certain systems. However, it is more likely that they have done a sufficient amount of reconnaissance, that they have done a sufficient amount of research leading up to that moment, at which point their payload, whatever it is that they have deployed, goes in and shuts down that system. And it happens very, very quickly. So that is one of the key differences. And that speed often contrasts with the recovery process and the length of time it may take to get back to business as usual, plus whatever enhancements you need to make as an organization. But also just the sheer process of combing through what might have been affected, whether it is data, and from a reputational communications and stakeholder management perspective, what we do, and the key here, is to manage expectation around that longer tail. I know we were just talking before about some of these long tails of these incidents that come back many years later. But in those early days, spoken about facts, it's setting up that landscape, setting up that communications landscape, and allowing stakeholders to know that facts will emerge. Because this is often different or can be different to other crises where you may actually have more facts at the beginning of the incident. That is perhaps the speed and then the subsequent tail are the two really different components, I think, when it comes to addressing cyber incidents from a communications perspective.
I'm interested in why things go wrong, and I'll give you a little example. A few years ago, there was a large data breach here, and the CEO had gone out publicly and said some information very early on in the interests of transparency in supplying information. However, the story just kind of changed in a way, and that kind of left this person sort of kind of hanging out there on these words that were spoken at one point in time. And given that cyber incidents can evolve and there's often a dearth of information early on, how do you avoid, I guess, getting pinned early on for an incident and being, I guess, held to that when facts may change? Or not, actually, not facts may change, situations might change, or and facts might be uncovered.
The situation always changes, and that's one of the truths that we have come to know, as I'm sure many of your listeners have. And it's how you respond to that that is critical. And again, referring back to those early days of the incident and the one you mentioned, it is very tempting to get out and get ahead of an audience in front of a company, because rightly, a lot of these organizations want to demonstrate, they want to do the right thing, they want to demonstrate transparency. And that is the right thing. The issue, as we've already said, is when those facts change, the pace at which the situation evolves often means that what you say early on may not be the case 2 or 3 weeks later. Now, I've spoken about how we adjust and manage stakeholder expectations to allow new facts to emerge, but having the confidence to inform stakeholders and talk to stakeholders about what it is that you're doing in those early days actually is often better than trying to disclose or provide regular updates on, for example, the type of data that might have been affected, because that is going to take time to establish. So being confident enough and allowing your stakeholders to know that you are working through it, that you are doing X, Y, Z, and this can be updated at a high level, because again, the steps that you're taking might change, is more important in that early period to reassure than it is to get out in front of the situation and disclose information that is likely to change quickly, but also may simply be untrue. And mistakes and errors and issues often arise from those untruths. As I've said, is an established fact the situation will change. Therefore, what you need to do is be able to respond to that. But in those early days, you need to make sure that you're not contaminating these facts with any assumptions.
Yeah, exactly. And how many organizations do you find have crisis communication playbooks where they can go and they've kind of laid out some of these procedures? And can you explain like a little bit about what those types of playbooks entail and how they can help in a kind of breaking situation?
I mean, luckily, more and more is the short answer. And I'm always going to say not enough. But the other thing that I want to make a distinction here is between sort of three layers that we see of your crisis response strategy. And you'll have an incident response plan that is organization-wide that is designed to respond to a variety of different incidences, whether they across the entire spectrum, including cyber. And then within that, you may have a crisis communications plan. Again, that is specifically to handle the communications aspect in response to any form of incident. There's another level, which is having a crisis communications playbook that is specific to a particular set of circumstances. And that is cyber specific. So we'll call it a cyber crisis communications plan. And that is to target and to respond in the event you have a cyber incident, you are the victim of a cyber attack. And within that, the aim is to test or to put place down on paper or whatever format you want to store it, as many processes and as much material that you can in order to familiarize yourself and your teams in the event of a cyber incident. And it's, of course, completely obvious that I should say that. But far too often, what we see is that organizations, they simply, some of them do not have these in the first place. So they are often going around in the dark, trying to rely on existing material that may not be applicable or material that hasn't been tested. And that is a really important part of this whole process as well. So you have your cyber crisis communications playbook within which you have the structures that are required to respond, within which you may have existing sample messaging to allow you to quickly respond, whether it's through a holding statement or FAQ. But also you have a process contained within that that allows you to update and test that crisis communications plan, because your plan really is only as good as the last time that you either went through it in a tabletop or that it was tested in anger. So that's a part of the whole process that is often forgotten that is just as important.
Yes, and you worked with organizations that were affected by the MOVEit incident, and this was a very large incident that was perpetrated by a long-known kind of extortion ransomware group known as CLOP, where they had exploited vulnerabilities in managed file transfer software. What challenges and complexities did that particular incident pose?
It was certainly an interesting summer when that occurred. But actually, there were a number. The scale, it goes without saying, we've seen similar. But the scale and the pace at which this occurred, to my earlier point around the speed and the variety of organizations that have it affected, was significantly different. And it was different to anything that we'd seen in a long time. And as a result, we interacted with numerous organizations that have been affected. And one of the key things that we had to do was balance the expectation of a single organization with the wider context of what was occurring. And I say that because it was important. It was particularly important for that organization that may, to use your example earlier, have someone at the helm that wants to get out ahead of the situation and talk about what is going on, because it's their business, it's their company. But actually, because of the experience of ourselves and the other advisors, we knew that this was happening to a number of different organizations. And so one of the challenges there was saying and demonstrating transparency to stakeholders, but also informing that organization. If you speak now, if you go out now, this is, you're going to be ahead of the pack. At some point, individuals, organizations are going to be disclosing, but it was understanding when that was appropriate and when it was right to be first. So the reality is, as we all know, there were numerous organizations affected. We had to ensure that they were demonstrating transparency to those stakeholders and that they were informing those that needed to be known. But also, we wanted to provide them with that wider context. So this isn't just happening to you. This is happening across the board to a number, and allowing them to make decisions based on that, wider context and background of what was occurring. So that was a complexity based on the scale. The other thing that it was particularly interesting and is slightly more nuanced is the manner in which the data or was being published. And as I recall, during that particular instance, Klopp would post first the name and then subsequently the data on their site.
Yes.
And so you'd almost have this, I definitely wouldn't call it a false start, because it was, the name of an organization that was affected. But there was that additional moment of, okay, as a result of this interim step, where the company is getting named, how do we go about this versus when, if the data is being published? So that was another consideration that we had, and there were cases where we were going, okay, actually, your data has not necessarily been published. It is your name. So in this case, it's scenario X. When this happens, it's scenario Y. So there were multiple layers and multiple nuances to this particular incident.
That leads me to my next question about situations where threat actors are very active in sort of extorting in organizations and being very public about it. We saw one of these situations recently with Oracle, but increasingly threat actors are kind of teasing a name out there, releasing bits of data, generating press. And tell me about, I guess, how do you sort of counter those sort of situations where you have an unpredictable actor also influencing the communications?
And it's a great example, and there are, you know, to extend as well, cases where the threat actor is reaching out to victims directly, and all of these different pressure tactics, which may be unfamiliar to an organization, but unfortunately to those of us that are involved in this are actually relatively familiar. And as a result, the first thing we do is provide that context and say, this is what to expect. And we often do that at the beginning of the incident because, yes, you're absolutely right that these tactics occur. There are new tactics, new forms of pressure tactics every incident, but there is a baseline that we expect. And so what we do very early on is provide those details. So say to an organization, this is what may happen as a result of this threat act activity. Your data may be published, but it also may be published on, maybe published on the dark web. It may be published on a social media platform. They may reach out to individuals. It all depends on the particular threat actor. So by providing that context to the organization, we're then able to say, okay, in this scenario, this is what we're going to say. And that's where you have your high level key messaging that can then be turned or transformed into stakeholder specific communications. But in the earliest moments, in the early stages of that incident, it's walking the organization through those scenarios so that when it does happen, as awful as it is, it's not unfamiliar. It's not completely unfamiliar. And then to that point as well, it's looking beyond the finish. So what happens if that threat group splinters and that data is then found subsequently elsewhere? So it's very tempting to kind of stop these incidents and think, okay, we're done. But you've just got to be sure that if something happens in a couple of years, a couple of months, whatever it is, that you have, in our case, the communications good to go so that you can provide that update and that you can be measured in your approach and your response.
We've spoken about the public-facing component, almost sort of consumer-facing, but as important for organizations are communications with their customers and partners, because those entities may be concerned if their data was exposed. Is there any different strategy to communicate with those stakeholders versus the public?
So again, I'm actually going to extend your question a little bit, if I may, and say you're absolutely right. But also, it's the customers, partners, but it's also your former customers, your suppliers, your vendors, and absolutely, and most importantly, in some cases, your internal stakeholders, so your employees. And the reason I've extended that is because, yes, you absolutely have the public facing side. So for purposes of this conversation, let's call it the media. But each of those individual groups that I just mentioned require a different set, or may require a different set of communications, because you're right, they are affected in different ways. And I'll use the example of employees as a prominent one, because they may be impacted twice. On the one hand, if there's operational disruption, going back to my three pillars, they may have to work twice as hard to respond, and they may also be handling inquiries, but they may also be affected as a result of the incident. So understanding how that you communicate with them, and that actually at the center of this, there's a human, is really important, because, you know, we know the pressure these incidents put on people working on the front lines, particularly if they're in organizations or institutions such as healthcare, is enormous. So actually just remembering that at the center of this, there is an individual, they are a human, they do need to be treated in a manner that befits you and all as an organization, but with that consideration, is really important. Having said that, there are always some control measures that you need to put in, because unfortunately, and depends on the kind of communications channels that exist, we expect much of this to leak. So everything is that we draft, everything that we publish is an anticipation that is going to be made public at some point. So while there is that distinction that you alluded to, there is also the understanding that anything that is released is likely to be made public. And that's important, because we've all seen examples of where employee communications designed only for an employee or a specific group of employees get revealed, and the effect that that can have on an organization's reputation. So that is something that we absolutely have to consider as well.
And when you spoke earlier, you said that the third prong of it and where you really came in was reputational management. I'm curious of your perspective on is the public more or less sympathetic or indifferent to cyber incidents these days?
I always say, underestimate the public at your peril, because they are very, we are all much more familiar with these cyber incidents, and therefore much more knowledgeable as a result. In some cases, of course, it is very novel, but actually, although individuals are more inured as a result of just how many are going on, in terms of sympathy, I would actually say that organizations are now being held to a much higher standard. And because the general public, to use your example, are more familiar, they know also how organizations should be responding. They may themselves be subject to numerous incidents where their information has been affected. So they have a high, may have a higher standard. And so, while of course they can be sympathetic with an organization that is ultimately a victim of criminal activity, actually the expectation is that companies are so familiar with this, they should know how to respond. And so that where that sympathy narrows is at that point where an organization is not seen to be, whether it's demonstrating transparency or implementing some of those basic steps that are expected in the time that we are currently in, with the amount of attacks that are currently ongoing.
Held to a higher standard. That's interesting. Tom, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Jeremy, no problem at all. Real pleasure talking to you.